your response.
Right, and House Bill 200 gave us a budget for the sexual assault clause, but close, because we transferred to where we get our funds, we get some of them from the general account, but when we were exclusively on the surcharge account, it was specifically to go towards basic training and in-service training.
And so, Director, when we moved away from the surcharge, did you get a bump in your general funds budget equivalent to what the surcharge was?
Kind of. We still get a little bit out of the surcharge account.
Okay.
My overall budget has increased, but that's because of the additional responsibilities the legislation deals.
Okay.
When you train, obviously you do the basics, but when you provide in-service that any other officer can come and attend, are they required to pay?
Yes.
Okay.
Unless it's co-sponsored. If I bring the course in, then I will typically cover the cost for that course. But if it's a third-party vendor, then the departments are required to pay for that registration fee.
Okay.
So Robert,
I think Robert's point is the state's funding police officer training to largely city and county employees the same way that we would expect them to do it for prosecutors.
But most jurisdictions do, have it in their own budget. They have pretty good training budgets.
Sure.
It does. But if they use posts, and it's a post program, then they don't have to pay.
Right. Robert, you look like you were going to have a comment, but does that answer your question?
No, that was the point I was trying to make. I just didn't know if there was kind of a mirror there that the post-command training that had officers come, not just to do certain types of training, and if the officers had to pay for that, or there's some kind of fee, kind of like we do on the prosecution side. So
right.
That was my point.
Well, with the legal defenders, I didn't follow their funding source. Will or Dan or anybody, do you guys know, is the state funding training for legal defenders yet?
That's a real problem because Salt Lake has a nonprofit organization that does it.
Yeah.
Most other counties contract often with private firms.
Right.
There are grants that they can get through the Indigent Defense Commission,
yeah,
some of which can go towards some training. But there's nothing structured, anything close.
Yeah, like us. Okay. Okay. Well, these are some great talking points. Anything else that you can think of? And if so, email them to me. But anything else to include on this list? Okay. I will prepare something and I will get it out either later this week or early next week, and then we can use it to start contacting reps, although if you're meeting with them this week, you need it sooner than later. So I'll start working on it this afternoon.
Well, and I can start with a rough conversation before forming my message.
Yeah, okay. Okay, the other, just so you're aware of, you saw that in SB 35 as part of the expungement modification, is UPC is going to be required to maintain a list of all the prosecuting agencies. And so, I talked about the small fiscal note we've attached to it. We just want to hire somebody because, as we've talked about it as a staff, we know who the county attorneys are, we know who the big cities are. It's going to be the smaller jurisdictions that either contract or are filing informations. And so we anticipate just having somebody to call the courts, find out who's filing informations, and creating a list.
And the reason this lands in expungements is, you remember the Clean Slate Bill passed a few years ago. That requires that the administrative office of the court send an email to the prosecutor's office of each of the entities with a list of clean slate eligible cases. As we've tried to implement that, we've found, there's no place that collects all the email addresses.
Yeah.
You want to know what's ironic about that? Is we're going to have to contact the courts to get the information of who those prosecutors are.
and
then we're
going to
turn around and provide them with the information.
Yeah. But we can use it. It'll be beneficial to have regardless.
Oh, absolutely. It certainly will, absolutely. But it just makes me laugh that UPC is going to collect this information and provide it to the courts. And to get the information, we have to go to the courts to get it.
Seems like a very judicious thing to do.
Yeah.
Classic government.
And it is a good idea because then we can reach out, to these smaller contract prosecutors that we probably don't see very often at our conferences, and just reach out and be a support.
Charge them for a quarter.
What's that?
And charge them for a quarter.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and so then for next year's legislative session, as I talked to Dan, I talked to Scott in the offices, I've been wanting to get a part-time secretary for a while, and so as the legislature just keeps adding responsibilities to us, I think I'm going to go next year and say, hey, could we get a part-time secretary? And it could be, I mean, depending upon the status of our budget, I may or may not need some general funds, but it would be nice if we had a part-time secretary, because Tyson, Marlise, and myself are really expensive secretaries. And so, you know, this, maintaining this project, this database would be one thing that that person could do, and then I'm working on a whole laundry list of other things that a part-time secretary could do, so.
I was just gonna say, are you sure you want a part-time? I mean, maybe you should ask for a secretary, because there's always something to have done, right?
Right, and as we, and as I develop my job description, it may turn into that. The other thing that I was thinking of is you know, expanding this person to do some grant work, either to look for grants that we could apply for. Marlise and I, we have talked about if we had funding that we could split her in two, is have a domestic violence resource prosecutor and have a sexual assault resource prosecutor.
Seems morbid. I don't want to split Marlise.
Hey, if the numbers on the scale are lower, I'm all for it.
So yeah, I mean, to that point, Kathy, is if we had somebody that was full time or, you know, something else, is we could pursue some of these other opportunities. So we'll see how that goes. But that's something that I'm looking at for the next year, next session. Okay, Robert, we're up to training committee report.
So number five, we got Tab C.
Yeah.
Trainer.
Yeah. So as I said, you can see the list of our confirmed students. There's probably three or four more that I have reached out to and or have reached out to but haven't heard. So if you've got anybody that you would like to add to that. The faculty, just real briefly, Tyson, you wanna tell us about Jared, Jen, and Joanne? I didn't even notice that, Triple J.
Jared and Jen are my TSRP counterparts from Idaho and Colorado. Joanne is the director of the National Traffic Law Center, which is a sub group of NDAA.
Oh, I put NHTSA.
And she was part of the new Train the Trainer curriculum development, and that's why we thought it would be good to bring her in as part of that. Jared, I told our staff that I think Jared's the best of the best when it comes to training. He's a mentor of mine. I look up to him. I reach out to him all the time. Jen's really good from Colorado as well, and obviously getting our neighbors to help participate in this is going to be beneficial. So I don't know. Anything else you want me to say with that?
Just the reason that we've had to go bring in some out-of-state folks is because we have lost most of our senior trainers that we've used to train the trainer before. I would appreciate Steve coming back for staying with us. So Steve will be on faculty, but it'll be a good course. We're gonna do it down in St. George. Looking forward to it. Ed's gonna join us. Ed Montgomery, just to be clear.
And we've tried to reach out and get even some of our younger prosecutors that we know still need time to grow, but then to help them grow. So like, for example, Dominique Katipez from Carbon County, she's been prosecuting maybe 4 years. She is a go-getter. She is a smart young woman. And so where we might have looked at someone with more senior years, we've tried to balance. So we have some of our more senior experience and some of the younger, but ones that show really good potential to grow into being leaders within the prosecution community.
Right.
So we've got a good mix.
Yeah, also Darcy Goddard wanted to come, and she wanted to include some of the people that she uses for their civil conference, and so I'm waiting to hear back to see if she's got any additional suggestions there. So that's Train the Trainer. That is actually our next training event, and then I didn't put spring on here. How did I skip spring? So spring is not important. Yeah, I know. So it's going to be at the Mountain America Expo Center in South Jordan. I think we're going to try, start moving away from the downtown Sheraton, just because they're pricing themselves out of what we want to spend. So we'll see how Expo Center goes. We decided, the training committee, you know, we have not been having an advanced trial course for a number of years, and we talked about the pros and cons. But what we're going to do this year is we're going to do a visual trial course where we teach like advanced PowerPoint, we teach some screen capture, video editing, audio editing, so that people can make their presentations, trial exhibits, things like that, make that much more interactive. And so that's going to be June 7th through the 10th. We're scheduled to have it here in this room, and so by necessity it's probably going to be small. It'll be just on a first-come, first-served basis, and one person per office. You know, we may get multiple people from the bigger offices, but we'll have to go to them and say, we only can allot you one seat. You guys decide who you want to send to that. But that will be something that we are developing. Then UPAA is going to be in Kanab in June, and that will take us up through our next two council meetings. Any Steve, anything or any questions for training committee? I think, Ed, you're going to become the new chair of the training committee. Yeah, so Ed Montgomery is going to be the chair of the training committee, taking over for Steve. So
just another note, as far as it's not a conference, but our trainings, our legislative updates. We have added, we've already got the schedule, and Marilyn's worked hard. I think the majority of it, if not all of it, is now confirmed. We have added Weber County to that. We've not done one up there in the past. We don't really recall why, but we've also added Salt Lake County, so we'll be doing that at post. We've had a request to do two sessions. This year we're only going to do one, and we're just going to see what the need is. Because a lot of offices like to do their own, and you know, we support them in that, but we're going to do it this year. And so all of that's going to happen in the month of May. And so if you could help, and once Marilyn gets that finalized, she'll send that out. If you could help with your departments and reminding them and saying, hey, you know, go listen up, get this information.
Yeah, I don't know how I missed that one as well. I thought it was going through the training calendar. Anyway, you've got the training calendar. What's not on there, also do want to talk, Marlise, since you now have the confirmed dates for the HB 200.
Yep, and I was going to do that when I
do my report. Okay, all right. So
but
we'll
I can
hold
do it now.
That.
It's whatever you do.
Either.
Well, since we're talking about training, I'll just include it. As you know, HB 200 mandated the offering, mandated Post and UPC to offer the Sex Crimes Investigations course, which is an intensive 3-day course for investigators of the offenses. In the past, we've just done 2 a year at Post, and then of course COVID came along, and so we had quite a gap where we couldn't do any. And it's a course that you just need to do in person. It's not something that you would lose significant value to do it via Zoom. So we held off, which meant in August, we took it off-site for the first time. We took it to St. George. Dixie State University Police Department sponsored it, gave us the location. We took it down there with our faculty. Then in September, we did it at Post. And then in November, we took it to Vernal. The Sheriff's Office in Vernal sponsored it there for us to do it. So we did it 3 times in 3 months. It was extremely well received. And the benefit of it is that it makes it so that more officers from a given agency can go, because they don't have the travel expenses. And there's no fee for this. Anyone can attend that fits those categories. So Director Stevenson and I and Bob talked after the Vernal one, and our goal is, and I just finished confirming this morning, so for 2022, February 7 to 9, we're doing it at Post and Draper. That class is already full with a waiting list, which is typically, we always have a waiting list, it fills up. March 7 to 9, Utah State University is hosting it up in Logan, and we have locations for both of those, obviously, are confirmed. September 7th to 9th in Richfield, and we're going to be using a campus location there as well. They're working on that. And then October 3rd through the 5th, we'll be doing it in Moab, and they're working on a location in Moab. The goal is to do 3 Post sessions every 2 years, and then rotate these off-site locations as well as St. George and Vernal again. so that every 2 years we'll hit these regions of the state offering this course and then maintaining the three outposts. We'll see how it goes. We anticipate it'll fill up. We always have lots on the waiting list. And with turnover in law enforcement, we definitely think there's a need, at least for the next few years. We might find that we can then dial it back some, but between COVID and turnover, we definitely have the need and the demand. So we have a busy year.
If I may, Director Church?
Yes, please.
I just want to thank my aides, Andrew, and this group for the effort with the sexual assault class. It is awesome. And Tyler tirelessly keeps this engine going, and I just want to thank her for her efforts and definitely her support at the church.
Yeah, thanks. And we appreciate yours.
Thank you, Director.
Okay, Robert.
So we got the UPA report from Kathy and Marilyn.
At this moment, I don't think we have anything new to report. We've confirmed the CNAB Conference Center for our conference, and we're meeting later this month. We've got a couple of people already scheduled and confirmed, but we need to fill in a lot of spaces, and we'll meet again this month and try and get that going.
Is your board full? I know we've
yes,
talked about
at
that.
This
okay.
Moment, yes, it is.
Okay. Okay.
All right, number 7, Resource Prosecutor's Report, Marlison Tyson.
So I'll just continue on then from this. I'll just refer you to the report that's included in the materials. You'll see that the past quarter for me was considerably consumed with the HB 200 courses that we did and taking it throughout the state. And then I'm also in the process of just going through, revising, updating, getting some more current information for that curriculum. Printed out, the curriculum's about that thick, about 2.5 to 3 inches thick, which includes all the slides, supporting information, the sites to where the supporting information comes from. We've partnered unofficially on more of a friend and colleague basis. We partner with Dr. Hopper, who's a psychologist with the Harvard School of Medicine, a professor there and a trauma expert. And so I consult with him often. He's in my speed dial to make sure that what we are teaching is current and founded based on science. So that pretty much consumes my last quarter and the beginnings of this quarter until we start hitting the road and doing more trainings. Any questions for me? Okay.
My report's in the summary. You can take a look at that. I'm doing the same thing I always do, and if you guys need anything from me, let me know. but really, when it comes to the impaired driving stuff, and I've been trying to reach out, if you are seeing issues creeping up, make sure you're letting me know and be aware of it. I think a lot of people got more time at the beginning of the pandemic to start researching issues and doing things, and it was interesting to watch my requests for assistance like skyrocketing during the pandemic because people weren't handling cases as much, and then when all of a sudden you started handling all your cases again, everybody didn't have time anymore and got back to triaging and everything. But I want to know if there's issues that are emerging. I want to help. I want to be a part of that. So if you are seeing it or hearing it, please let me know.
You're a good resource, Lee. I sent a couple of our rookies to you on some issues, so thank you.
Happy to help.
Well, and try and encourage your police departments to have us come and train. You know, if Tyson hasn't been to your department or your people in your area for, 2 to 3 years, it's time for him to rotate back through. And same with myself, on anything DV or sex assault, try and encourage your police departments to have us come back through to make sure that they are staying current. We know, as far as learning models, that you only take a small percentage of what you learn with you. So going through it again, they're going to learn. They're not gonna sit through the whole thing and say, I knew all of this. They're gonna learn something, and that just makes for better officers, better departments, and less lawsuits. So, it's a win-win.
I've started cold calling police departments from a training list, training coordinator list I got from B.L. Smith. So eventually I'll be contacting all of your jurisdictions.
Travis,
But just kind of slowly, I sent out a handful of emails every week, and hey, would love to come. Here's my flyer. I've heard back from very few. I haven't gotten many responses from police departments, but eventually I will hit every single person on that list. So we'll see.
All right, so Bob, are you going to talk about the AOC?
Yeah, just briefly. Yeah, so if you remember, Jonathan Puente came and gave us a presentation in September. And so SWAP is and was asking for nominations to sit on this Office of Fair, or no, excuse me, the, yeah, whatever that committee was called. A second.
Fairness and Accountability.
Thank you. Yeah, the Fairness and Accountability. So I don't recall who SWAP appointed, but the UPC appointee is Che Arguello from the AG's office. Che's graciously accepted. He's the one that does the HB 281 review cases, and we're using him quite a bit now, so we appreciate him doing that. So just wanted to make you aware of that. And Jonathan sent just a brief summary of what that's going to be, and you can read about that in tab F. So that's all on that one.
And then Bobby, we'll talk about annual awards.
Yeah, thank you. So other state UPCs, if you will, many of them do an annual award. Like the AG's office does annual awards at the end of the year. And I don't know if your individual offices do. I don't know if Salt Lake, you're big enough, if you guys do awards.
We do.
How do they
receive? We have it for the pandemic. But
yeah.
We do the team of the year, the trial attorney of the year, the civil attorney of the year, support staff of the year. Again, with the COVID, we've had a two-year hiatus. But
right.
When we meet in real life again, I'm sure it'll come
back. Yeah. And so these other eight, you know, states, they do similar awards, and they do either an awards dinner. I don't know that if we adopt this, I don't know that we need to do a dinner or can afford to do a dinner. But, you know, they do it at their big annual conference. And they just talk about the camaraderie that it builds, you know, gives an opportunity to focus on, you know, other offices, smaller offices. And so when I came back from a meeting, we raised this with UCDA in November at their meeting, and they were supportive of something like this. And so you can see, you know, some examples that other states do. You know, Prosecutor of the Year, some lump that into, that includes, you know, you can nominate your misdemeanor and your felony prosecutors for the Single Prosecutor of the Year Award. Others break it out, felony, misdemeanor, civil practitioner. That even include their investigator, victim advocate, certainly support staff of the year. Texas does a distinguished faculty of the year, but they're large enough that they have you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of trainers. Ours is small enough that I don't know if we're ready yet to do a distinguished faculty, because it might be the same person that gets nominated
everybody
every year.
Gets an award, huh?
So everybody gets some participation. Yeah, everybody gets an award. A DUI Prosecutor of the Year, a DV Special Victims Juvenile Prosecutor. I mean, oh, and they even include the Legislator of the Year. So these are just some ideas, and so I just wanted to bring it to you all and see, what do you think? Is this something that y'all want us to look at? Basically, what I would envision is we would come up with criteria. You know, I'd start with other states and look at what their criteria is, and we just open it up for nominations. And then either this body would review the nominations and we would decide, or maybe, you know, come up with a subcommittee. I don't know how we would want to do that, but is that something that you're interested in pursuing? And it makes no difference to me. I mean, it's just one more thing we'd have to do, but, you know, is there advantage to doing something like this?
For me?
Yeah.
I'm not a big advocate for it. I just worry that it might get political. And I guess I'm sort of the opinion that, you know, guilty, guilty, guilty is kind of its own reward. I don't know. I'm not big on awards, I guess. And that's my personal
opinion. Yeah.
And I'm probably an outlier. Make sure Ed never gets any new awards.
Do not ever get Ed an award.
I would express a little bit of a different opinion. I'm not a big one for awards either, but I do think it, I don't know exactly how to say it. I do think, I noted in here that these rewards were reported to the media outlets and things like that. I do think, for lack of a better way of saying this, it helps at least get a little bit of a thumb on the messaging about prosecutors and to say, look at the great work this prosecutor is doing or what they've done here. I don't think right now we have much of a thumb on that. I think we're letting it be controlled by a lot of other, and much of it is beyond control, but I just think that that might be a little bit of a way to help. That's just my two cents.
I'd see value, a different value, and that value is just as the conferences give us an opportunity to come together, when certain individual prosecutors are introduced to the large group, it gives you an idea of, oh, well, I've got a DUI question. Maybe that person who just won DUI attorney. So it helps with the networking and the interpersonal relationships among prosecutors. Not so much the reputation of prosecutors, but that interdependency and synergy, for lack of a better word.
So coming from an office that does awards, the one positive feedback that I get is there's very few times that we hear, oh my gosh, you've done a great job, and positive affirmations and stuff. And I don't know that you need an award for that, but I think it is nice to point out, you know, something great that someone's done, because you don't hear it.
We don't have clients that call us sobbing, saying that sometimes the victim, but the victims are dealing with their own trauma.
Yeah.
Like, it's not fair to put that on them.
So the state of Minnesota runs a DUI Prosecutor of the Year, and they've actually partnered with a lot of their people there, but also the Minnesota Twins. And they award this person on the field during a Twins game every year. And so I actually, when I heard about this, like 3 or 4 years ago, I went to the Highway Safety Office and asked if we could do something similar, try to get MAD involved, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, partner with the Jazz, you know, bring that person to a Jazz game during break or halftime or something, do something like
really cool. Corner when they stop selling the beer?
Yeah.
See outside.
And I actually think some of the beer companies would help with this. So that they could say, you know, in Texas, the beer companies pay for everything, right, with their impaired driving stuff. And so, because they then get the messaging of, hey, be responsible, but come drink our beer, right? And so the Highway Safety Office wasn't real keen on that. They had concerns. And I only bring this up just so that we can talk about maybe what some of the concerns about that would be, is, you know, how do you decide? It can't just be who gets the most guilty verdicts in trials, right? Because we're not supposed to just go for guilty. We're supposed to go for justice. And so having clear parameters of you know, what would cause the AG's office to present Assistant AG X for this award, you know, and having clear parameters, we want to make sure that we are just really specific and clear in what we're doing and make it not about numbers, which then becomes tough, because what criteria do you use if you don't use numbers?
Yeah.
So, but I would love it, and I think if we can make it, I think doing it at our conferences is cool, but like if I was going to get an award, which I would probably not be eligible for any of these awards, but if I was to get one, I think it'd be way cooler to go out on the floor at a Jazz game than at our spring conference. That's a bigger deal.
I think that would do more to benefit what you're talking about than what I was talking about.
But that's bigger. That's we're having to partner with people. We're having to get acquiesce. Like, you know, you can't just walk out onto the court at a Jazz game. They've got to let you do that. And so there's a lot that goes into that, but I think if we do it, let's shoot for the moon and drag our feet in the treetops, and if we have to.
Anybody, our online folks, any thoughts from you guys?
The other thing I was going to mention is Tyson already mentioned, and it's actually in that there needs to be criteria, because it's not all about convictions. Also, one other thing, Tyson. Sounds like Tyson assumes everyone was a Jazz fan.
I, I'm not that big of a Jazz fan, but I still think it'd be cool.
We certainly can't do a Broncos halftime, so.
Make it RSL if you want. I don't.
We can do the Utes. Everybody's a Utes fan.
Yeah. They were last week.